very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am your fingers or your
king. Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
Stupid girls.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey of Podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is
Catfish.
Catfish, we have a supersized, the longest episode of Game of Thrones ever, so we had to bring in a special guest. Why don't you tell our listeners who it is?
Oh my God, it is the one, the only.
Only.
Mork.
Hey, everybody. You look beautiful tonight.
We look beautiful tonight. We have all just watched Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night, the longest episode ever, the biggest battle the show has ever tried to do. We assume it's the biggest battle. The screen is pretty dark, but this was it. This was a moment I said before we started the actual podcast part that I read the book back in 2010, so I've been waiting 8.5 years for this answer. How long have you been waiting, Catfish? Because you read these books before me.
Oh, boy. It's been at least since, I want to say, 2004. Let's say that.
Well, very definitive. Well, okay. Listeners, Catfish and I went and watched this episode at a special screening in Hollywood at the famed Grauman's Chinese Theater. Why don't you tell people who sponsored this, Catfish?
Well, it's sponsored by HBO. It's called a FYC, for your consideration event. Basically, they offer any Television Academy members the opportunity to submit your name to get in for this. I did not get in for it because they've got a lottery now, but luckily I knew two people who had a plus one, and so we were plus ones tonight, Bubba.
Big event. Emilia Clarke introduced David Benioff and Dan Weiss, and they spoke before the event, and then they passed it off to this episode's director, Miguel Sapochnik. I recorded the audio of that, but because I was so surprised that Emilia Clarke was hosting, I missed kind of everything she said other than, here's David Benioff and Dan Weiss. So I'm going to put...
It was more like, here's David Benioff and Daniel Weiss.
So,
no, it was not okay, like that. Yeah, okay. It was not like that at all. I apologize.
So I'm going to put that audio at the very end of this podcast. Listeners, we've said how long we've been waiting for it. We want to hear how long you've been waiting for it. We're going to jump into it right now. We're going to start with our special guest, Mork. The Night King is iced. What is your ranking for this episode out of 10?
I'm going 10 heptuple W's.
Heptuple W's?
Winterfell, Wildling, White Walker, Welcome Wagon of Westeros.
Dang! So yeah. 10 out of 10, that is high praise.
Yes.
Why so high, Mork?
Well, there was a few things that I didn't love about it, but overall I had a horrible feeling in my stomach. It was not due to the delicious chicken pot pie I had for dinner. I was scared, I was nervous, I was anxious throughout. It was super tense. It looked great when I could see it. I'm curious, I was watching it on a beautiful TV screen, which is only 60-some inches. You guys saw it on a huge, huge cinema.
We did.
Was it dark there? How did it look?
Oh, I will say this, Mork, I turned to Bubba at some point during the screening and I said, well, at least I don't need to complain that my TV is too dark, because this episode was dark, dark, dark. It was, you know, you probably actually was probably lighter for you than it was for us. There were many times I didn't know, what is that, somebody we know getting killed? Who the heck is it? What's going on?
Well, Mork went 10 out of 10. Catfish, what is your ranking out of 10 for this episode, The Long Night?
I feel like I got to split it up a little bit. Last week I said, you know, I gave the episode a higher ranking because of where I thought it fit in the overarching arc of the series.
Yeah.
And I thought we needed that, even though, I mean, it had some beautiful moments in it. This one, I'm going to ding it a little bit because of my concerns about the overarching arc that it represents. I'm only going to give this amazing, incredible, super tense, super dark episode 9.5, what I like to call double Bs.
Double Bs?
Yeah, badass babes, because they are all throughout this episode. We have got Arya. We have got Brienne. We've got little Lady Lyanna. And we have got Daenerys.
What about Jon Snow?
Yes, he was, you know when they say the least shall be first? In this episode, he was the first, shall be least and hiding.
Well, okay. Both you guys very high. What I'm going to be shocked because I'm going to be the lowest ranked out of 10. And I'll explain it as we review the episode entirely. Last week, I gave it 10 out of 10, that very slow, non-action-packed episode. Mm-hmm. This episode, I'm going to give it 8. What I like to call triple B's out of 10.
Triple B is better than double B. What's your triple B?
Blood-curdling battle buildup. Before the battle was actually my favorite part of it. My legs were shaking. I was so tense. Now, this was part of the battle, but when the Dothraki go out with their flaming Arrakis, and then the Arrakis start going out, I was so scared. I was shaking so much. So the beginning part of the battle is what I love the most, and there's so many great moments in it. Another thing I gotta love about it is so many of these things, boy, you think to yourself, our heroes aren't in trouble. I don't know how many times in this episode I thought, they're dead. Now, of course,
there was a little bit too much of that, which might be why you're dinging it, where it's like, they're gonna die, saved at the last nanosecond.
Time is moving slowly in Winterfell, that's for sure. I didn't like some of that slow-mo at the very, very end. Maybe I'll get to that. But listeners, still, we are super high. We're flying off the theater, which exploded when Arya did the deed and took him out. Oh, my God, a great callback to when she was fighting Brienne last year and she dropped the dagger to catch it in her other hand and then, you know, almost stabbed Brienne. She used that same move. Hello, we've seen it before, Arya. Repeat. And so, oh, my God, the theater exploded when the Night King got iced. We are the Joffrey of podcasts. If somehow you've never listened to us before, we are named after first of his name, first in your hearts, King Joffrey Baratheon, the greatest character known on planet fiction, and we have been building for this for so long. There are 3 episodes left in the Chinese theater. They didn't play on next week's Game of Thrones, so we don't know. Mork, you may have to lead us in that a bit.
So we don't know whether Joffrey, who faked his own death, is going to come back in episode 4 or episode 5. I don't think they're going to save him for the last episode, episode 6. So it's one of these 2 next episodes that finally, listeners of Joffrey, a podcast, will be rewarded.
Definitely.
We're going to reward somebody. Also, real quickly, just because my phone's going a little slow, it's gonna be in the middle of the episode when I'm going to add all the great new names to our double L's.
Double L's.
That's what we like to call our loyal listeners who've been kind enough to write us, to retweet us, to write us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublephq, the word double, the single letter P, the word HQ, the letters HQ for headquarters. And you can tweet at us at doublephq. You can find us on Instagram at doublephq. I sent out a lot of photos that we took at this special event at Grauman's Chinese Theater. And so now that my phone is open, I want to give a shout out to some more Season 8 survivors. We've got Priscilla Bizarra. We've got Caroline Fleming, Corey Bramblett. We've got Kara O'Hearn, Mark Walk Walker, Jeremy Roar, W Axel Foley, and Heath Solo from our good friends at Podcast Winterfell. And we've also got, I can't even pronounce this, so I'm just going to spell it. Follow this person on Twitter, FirAnnion. So it's like Firiannon, something like that. We love loyal listeners. Thank you guys so much.
Right, and there's one more. There's our old friend, the Black Kraken, Revere Terry, who, you know, we didn't notice it last week, but he noticed about 75 times them talking about the Crips. And so I just want to shout out to him because he is Crypt worthy.
Actually, I'm pretty sure we've named him, not the Black Kraken, in week 1 as a Season 8 survivor. But hell, we'll keep naming you, keep retweeting, keep giving us comments. We don't have ads. We just want to talk to other wonderful Game of Thrones followers. So, guys, when Catfish and I were driving back from the Chinese Theater, we were thinking, well, how can we really cover this episode? So I almost say, let's just hit play on the episode, and we'll just go through it beat by beat when anything hits us. The opening credits, they said they were going to change in every episode of Season 8. I didn't notice any change this week. I noticed last week that they had this patch of, you know, crosses and flaming that surrounded Winterfell, but I saw it last week, so I didn't notice anything in this episode that really struck me as new in the credits. The episode opens on a pair of hands that happen to be Samwell Tarly's. Because of that, because, you know, there's always circling, I thought, well, ooh, if we open on Samwell's hands, maybe we'll end on Samwell's hand, and maybe Sam will save the day.
Oh.
Not so much.
No.
Well, he didn't ruin the day.
No. I think everybody fought so well.
Except for John.
You know, some people have actually reached out to me via text and said, yeah, John didn't do too well in this episode. I thought, you know, the odds, what they were against, if you're going to get rid of the Night King in the third episode of a 6-episode season, in just one real battle, there's only been one battle between the Army of the Living and the Army of the Dead, every other kind of fight between them really wasn't an army versus an army. If you're going to do it, you've got to make it, you know, you've got to make it count. And so Jon Snow, you know, he couldn't do much. He couldn't even slay the dead dragon because it was just too impossible. And so they made it count. They made it really hit us. And so I've been blathering for a bit. What did you guys think of this, you know, beginning scene where people are having to go outside? And it, you know, I mentioned it starts with Samwell's hands. Kind of this beginning whole beat ends when Sam finally gets to the front lines and Ed is like, good grief, grow up here.
Well, I was surprised that Samwell was actually able to hold on to it since he's got kind of a slippery/butterfingers always lifting stuff from wherever he goes.
Well, maybe that's sticky fingers because he steals books, he steals killing, yeah, he steals, yeah, swords.
So it's weird. You know, it's funny that we talk about Sam here. I mean, I loved the setup. The setup was actually, they built tension by making it so that we thought the battle was going to start a lot sooner than it did. They'd build up to one spot and we'd be like, okay, it's going to start now. And then we'd go to another area and you'd think it's going to start. But some of my issues with this episode is it just, and I guess you can't help it, is you just lose track of people for a long time. And even maybe when you catch them again, it's so dark you don't exactly know what's happening with them.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, and some of that I think comes from the fact that a lot of Winterfell, I mean, we're only seeing it for the first time this year. The library, a lot of the different rooms, a lot of the halls. Some of the rooms we've definitely seen before, but so much of it is new. And for me, it was a small complaint, but a lot of the times, in terms of, I enjoyed the opening because I felt like, okay, that we're getting a little geography, so we're going to know where the action is happening and what needs to happen where and when we're really going to be in danger because a White Walker or a White, you know, crossed this boundary, but I had no clue. I don't know if it was because of how they staged it or just the fact that I was super unfamiliar with the new section of Winterfell. But I was getting excited. I was getting tense, but it didn't quite lay everything out as well as I hoped it would.
This opening setup, I almost want to call it Robert Altman-esque. We followed Sam, then kind of left Sam when we saw Lyanna Mormont, and then we kind of panned from her over to Tyrion. Then it goes from Davos putting arrows, getting them ready. He sees the Winterfell girls, Sansa and Arya, looking. Then they look up as the dragons fly overhead. It is trying to give us a sense of geography, let us know where everybody is. Then we're outside the castle and we're going to see everybody who's out here. And it was just wonderful in building the tension. I loved it.
One other small piece of tension that they were building was it was actually Ed's birthday, and at a certain point, they were going to do a little surprise. They didn't have time for it.
He got a surprise.
Well, eventually he did, and no one actually wished him happy birthday.
No, well, yeah, and death day, now in theaters.
Happy and re-birthday, and then re-death day.
Oh, good boy. Oh, yeah, Eddie. He came back tough. A lot of women out there fighting. We actually saw Alys Karstark because in one of the shots they leave Tyrion and we see Theon, Alys Karstark, and the Ironborn wheeling Bran Stark out to the Weirwood Tree. Tormund is with Beric. And then we also saw that the Hound was pushing his way like, oh, yeah, I was late. Sorry. Let me get out there.
One thing, when they show Jaime,
Gendry,
I had hoped that they would give Jaime some sort of dragon glass attachment for his instead of a golden hand, it'd be a dragon glass thing or something like that. And they never did that. And I realized, well, I guess there's really no point in ever doing that. So it was a missed opportunity to accessorize.
I mean, if the hand had a point on it, there would be a point.
Thank you, Catfish.
All right, so we're seeing the horses line up. Ghost shows up. Ghost is, I'm going to be honest, I lose Ghost after the initial charge.
We see him one more time, I think.
After the initial charge? Okay.
No, I think you're right. We see him here in the setup and then the initial charge, and then I don't remember seeing him again. But it was dark.
I'm going to go ahead, and we're seeing now Ser Jorah on the screen. Ser Jorah, who, like Theon,
peace.
I always thought that Sir Friendzone would survive the whole series. So when he ran out with the Dothraki and then was able to come back, I thought, okay, he's surviving. If you see the end of the episode, this is spoilers, you know he didn't. So sad. But he went out like a boss defending the woman he loved. So good for Ser Jorah. Good work, buddy.
He did. And meanwhile, the man that she loves said, I'm going to go hang out with my brother and try to save him because, you know, everything she's been accusing Tyrion of putting family over her, pretty much Jon just did that in this episode. So I'm sure she's going to be super happy about that in the wrap up. In the post fight breakdown.
Well, it's a chance it's okay to take because if he failed and they all die, she can't be mad at him. So, you know, he took a shot and at the end of the day it worked out.
It didn't because she's angry and she has a dragon, the only one left.
Fair enough.
Okay, so some people are saying they can't hear us on the live show, but that was a couple of minutes ago. I see it looks like audio's going out, so we hope. The first real bit in this episode that really creeped me out is you saw that one single horse coming forward, and I was like, uh-oh, that's not a good sign. It ended up being Melisandre. I had told my sister earlier this week, I said, if Melisandre comes back in this episode, there's a 50-50 chance that they'll defeat the Night King in this episode. If Melisandre isn't in this episode, he can't be defeated because Melisandre's whole thing, the Lord of Light's whole thing, is about finding the prince who is promised, or maybe the princess who is promised, who could, you know, defeat this Long Night. And when she came back, you know, a part of me is like, well, where are the other Red Priests? Where is everybody? But when she, you know, who some people I'm sure hate for her burning people alive, especially Shireen, when she lit these things up, I was like, I'm on Team Melisandre. I'm like, go, go, go.
You know, the only thing is we talked about last week about how poor Grey Worm and Missandei have to deal with racism in the North. And what do we have here? You know, Melisandre comes and lights up. Apparently she's okay with the Dothraki guys, but what about everybody else?
Do you speak the language? And Ser Jorah took a lot of time before he was like, should I say yes? What's going on here? But I loved it. And seeing those things light up, once again, it was before the battle that I loved so much. Seeing so much of these things light up, I
brilliant.
Thought, hell,
all that,
yeah, hell yeah,
all
let's
that
do this.
Lit up and Grey Worm's looking at his...
right, he's like...
He's looking at his spear and he's like, it's mighty cold and dark, this spear...
Yeah, are you going to light up ours?
Nothing. No. She's like, I'm moving on. That is so, so sad. So, you know, another thing is here is it's interesting that, I mean, even though you see so many people here, and again, I'm with you. The setup, so many people just waiting and waiting and waiting for these things to come out. But somehow in the battle, I mean, it was... I want to say a little anticlimactic, but also kind of cool that the Dothraki, we know the Dothraki are down just because their lights go out, like extinguishing firebugs going out.
Catfish, do you think it was a little weird? I mean, she's coming from the direction that the White Walkers are in. So how did Melisandre get in there? And
Just like Tormund. When the White Walkers are between them, they just went around. She went around.
Okay.
They can't see her. So that's completely fine.
Okay, that's totally fine. It was the same way that Arya evaded them in the library.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a little struck here by Melisandre, but I really loved when Sir Knuckles was like, "We got some unfinished business, you and me." Now, I mean, it makes sense, but on the other hand, how many other people in the show have forgiven? Daenerys is like, okay, we'll take you, Jaime, even though you killed the Mad King, right? And Samwell's like, all right, well, you killed essentially all the males in my family, but he's not happy about it, but he's still going on. But Sir Nicholas is like, no, you kill a child, and I'm going to take you down even if you can help in this battle.
I love that because it basically said that Davos knows he's going to die. He's not going to make it. And you know what? He's going to at least get one before he goes down. So.
Oh, right. Whether they're dead or alive, it doesn't matter. He's putting that notch on his belt.
Absolutely. He's been waiting a long time.
He has been waiting a long time. And who else has been waiting a long time? Arya, who gets to stare down Melisandre a little bit, and then they both walk away. Arya's like, no, you can't walk away from me. I'm walking away from you.
Well, Arya is no longer waiting as of last week. So they're overseeing. They're overseeing the Dothraki charge out. This is super exciting. We see Ghost racing along. We see Sir Friendzone racing along. His sword's not on fire, but he's got a Valyrian steel sword.
I almost thought that was a little bit amusing because it almost looks like Sir Jorah is kind of going as fast as he can to avoid being run over by everybody else. He's like, well, I guess we're going. I better kick my ass moving. And the video of them, the lit up swords charging towards the Nightwalkers, super cool. And then they start using their flaming trebuchets, which is, you know what, again, for Christmas, Mork, Bubba, please, flaming trebuchet for me.
Well, you ruined the surprise.
Excellent. I love it. So, yeah, so we see Sir Jorah. I guess I'll keep going. And then we see Wolf, and that is the last time.
We see Ghost charge forward. I kind of thought Ghost might come back and be a ghost-esque machina at the end of the episode. Like, hey, I'm back. I'll rescue you, John. You're in deep trouble.
Or the worst indignity would be for people who love the dogs would be an undead ghost. That would be horrible. The dire wolf walker.
Yes.
I thought maybe we'd get a little Nymeria this week, but it was not to be.
The we are now seeing the lights go out, and it was so tense. It was so incredible. I was freaking out so much. My legs were shaking. I keep pointing it out, but this beginning, you know, the setup to the battle, oh, my Lord. And when the Dothraki run out there and that thing scares them, oh, it just, you know, I'm lost for words at how... OF, we are screwed. I couldn't believe it. I love this part so much.
Yeah, no, they did a great job with Melisandre coming out, giving them a little boost, and then, oh, actually, no, it's not actually going to make any difference at all.
It's not, and I was a little confused again what the battle plan was for the Unsullied here. I mean, I know they don't have anything flaming, but they're just kind of like, they're going to stand around and... just wait for them to come and then fight as good as they can and then just lay their lives down, I guess.
It's true. And then, you know, just for a moment, I don't know if you guys caught this, but actually I think I saw Rickon running out there as well.
And in a straight line, Rickon.
Yeah, but I think he did okay this time. I think he did all right. Yeah, the battle, it wasn't clear, which I'm okay with, because a lot of times when you know what the plan is, usually it's not going to work, so I was fine with that. But did you guys think that maybe Bran should be warging and giving them some signals, or, you know, Jon and Dany should be getting a clear sense of what's going on flying around with the dragons?
Well, how about this? Why wait for them to come towards the castle? Light up the friggin' forest, man, like Mance Rayder did, so that you could see him coming.
Right.
Now, we've already mentioned it's so dark. The one thing that I guess I want to say that I found positive about it is I believe this is exactly how George R. R. Martin intends for the big battles to go. He always mentions the long night. He always talks about, you know, what did old Nan say? You know, the darkness that lasted a generation and babies who never saw the sun, light of the sun. And so the fact that it was so dark, it was a bit frustrating as a viewer, but I thought it was very accurate to what George R. R. Martin is trying to do in the books.
Originally, and Bubba, that was a great shout, originally Katharine Hepburn was supposed to play Old Nan.
Oh, did you like my...
Catherine Hepburn.
Now, one thing that was interesting, I think we get an idea of a plan that gets abandoned, which is John doesn't want Daenerys to go. He's like, well, the Night King's not here yet. And she says the dead are already here. So it seems like they're trying to draw the Night King in. But Daenerys, and what I think is a cool move for her, you know, we always talk about has she learned anything about being a good ruler. She knows the plan, I think, is to draw the Night King in, but she just can't stand to see people killed. So she is going to bust out the dragon ex machina and start kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a dragon, I'd like to think that I would try to use it. But again, you know, as like Bubba's pointing out, as we're seeing this, it's the Unsullied are 100 feet away from the wall, and yeah, they just waited. I thought they might advance a little bit, give them a little more wiggle room, use more of those wacky cranes. What do you call them, Catfish?
Trebuchets.
Ah, yes. The trebuchets. So we're into it, and it is there's no real build up here. I mean, it is full on. I thought people were dying right away. I thought it was just like, oh, okay, we lost Brienne, we lost Jaime, we lost all these people, and they live to see another getting tackled by 20 or 30 wights at a time and surviving again, which was cool.
It's funny that you know, I thought in the past maybe, Bubba, that you've been a little bit more frustrated about this than I am. But again, this is the time to mention that. Let's see. That is the first of maybe 7 times we think Brienne dies and maybe 8 times we think Jaime dies. So it's a little almost you could do a drinking game. Looks like they're about to die. Drink. You would be done by the end of this episode.
What?
Just pick one character. Not a multiple. Just pick one.
What were John and Daenerys waiting for? Once again, light them up. Don't let them get to your front lines. Light them up. And so Jon Snow, we're on the dragon. He sees that army on their dead horseback of White Walkers. He's about to light them up. And this was a moment that I loved. And it freaked me out. And once again, I was so tense when suddenly Jon Snow's going to light them up. And suddenly this cloud, the Night King brings the weather with him. This cloud is coming. I thought, holy smokes, this is awesome. I loved it.
That was amazing. And it's funny when you talk about George R. R. Martin. It feels like maybe the books did a better job of giving the idea of, you know, that the Long Night is something that is heavy weather and that lasts for a long time. Like, okay, maybe we saw it snow a little bit in King's Landing, but we don't have the sense that, like, the weather is appreciably bad and it's going to be appreciably bad for a long time.
Yeah, I think that would have helped. I completely agree. But in the moment of watching this episode, when that cloud just came and Jon Snow, you know, he's suddenly like, okay, dragon, let's go away from there, get away from this cloud. God, it scared me to death. I thought everybody's doomed. And of course, if it wasn't dark enough before, now it's dark and cloudy.
Right.
So you can't see anything. Oh my God. And there's a moment coming up where Jon Snow is flying through the treetops because not even the dragon can see where to go. Oh, I'm like, dragon, put your headlights on, shoot out some flames, man.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the dragon is bumping into some trees and stuff. That is bad, bad news.
One thing that I haven't noticed is, does Jon have a go word like Daenerys does with, you know, Dracarys? Like,
it'd be terrible if she never taught him that.
Right.
What do I say? Well, hers is Dracar Noir, and his is Old Spice.
Yeah, I am so tired I can't even whistle. Sorry.
Totally
Old
quiet.
Spice thing. But these dead are coming, and if there was a plan with the way the armies were put together, once that army of dead starts coming, the plan is gone. There is no plan. Forget the plan. And I think everybody who ran, they did a great – they were right to run. And the cutting is fast. You can't even tell, like, who's doing what. We're getting to a big moment, which – they wanted you to think Sam was going to die a million times when that knife was going by his eye. Ooh. And who saved him? Ed. And of course, by saving Sam, Ed, that opens you up to a birthday surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right in the back.
Right through the eye. It is not good. Now, I mean, there did seem to be a plan, but there wasn't a plan for success. It was a plan for failure. Okay, so if they overrun us here, we're going to do this. And then if they overrun that, we're going to do this. So there was a plan. It was just a series of events. And what is interesting here is that Sansa shows her real leadership tonight.
By getting down to the crypts and saying, I'm no good. Get
that is exactly right. Listen, we all know that when there's a big battle, the place to lead is from the basement, just like Joffrey. For me, Sansa graduated into a real queen tonight.
Hashtag yes, queen.
Well, there's definitely there were definitely some mirrors to Blackwater Bay, and I was kind of hoping. I mean, I don't know what strategy that Tyrion would have offered or could have offered, but it was nice to see, just like in the Red Keep, where we had Cersei and Sansa having their wine and chatting. Now Sansa's sort of taking that role here down in the crypt.
Yeah, I agree.
Not only that, but we do get a sense that since they're both going to live, there might be some Sansa Tyrion action.
I know. After I said there was no chance of it happening after their interaction in season 8, episode 1, Winterfell, in this one I thought, I thought they were going to kiss as like, okay, this is our last moment on Earth.
I mean, they recognize the strength in each other, which is really cool. Probably shouldn't have talked about it in front of Miss Sunday, but yeah, there you go.
Right. We'd all be dead if it wasn't for Daenerys. Oh, snap.
Boom.
Snap, indeed. It would have been, I thought, Tyrion should have taken advantage to go hit on Missandei at that point. No, babe.
Tyrion should have turned to Missandei and say, hey, I'm flirting here.
Yeah, trust me. I'm wrapping her around my little finger.
Okay, okay, here we go. So already it's fall back. They know they're in trouble. Fall back. And, of course, little Lady Lyanna Mormont saying, open the gates. She had a great goodbye episode, let's be honest.
Oh, she's great.
I think she might have had my most favorite goodbye episode.
Oh, yeah. It was hardcore, and you knew it was coming, and everybody is flooding in the gates.
Were you guys a little disappointed that Olenna Tyrell didn't show up as a white?
Oh, man, that would have been great if she had come from Highgarden. It's so far away. Like, there's really not much left of her when she gets there.
She's doing the best she can.
All right, so a million times, talking about who you think is going to die. I thought the Unsullied, who a lot of people said, ooh, they're supposed to be the most powerful army on Earth. When they were guarding Meereen, they kind of looked like chumps. But let me say that I thought they did a great job. They would open to let people through back into the castle, and then they would close their ranks behind it. Loved it.
The only thing is, I feel like I just lost Grey Worm. Super early and never found him again.
Oh no! He was the guy with the helmet and the spear.
And the spear, right?
And the black pajamas. That guy.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. You can totally. You just gotta look for him. You just gotta look for him, Catfish. This was something that I felt went on a little bit, and that there's
the retreat.
Still,
what do you mean?
Oh, not the retreat, but Danny and John. Because we see them first, the clouds roll in, and then after the clouds roll in, that protected the, I guess, lieutenants of the Night King.
Right.
But we see them after that. We see Jon's dragon, I think, going to town a little bit. But then now we cut back to them, and they're back in the clouds again. So I was a little confused why they were spending so much time in the upper
cumulus. Atmosphere. Yeah.
They did do some good faking here, because I thought for sure that, and I think Mork mentioned this earlier, I thought for sure that Bran was going to warg into a dragon.
Oh, yeah. I did, too. What? Who's to say he doesn't? And we'll get to that moment in
Ooh.
A bit.
Oh.
But this was just carnage. This was what we wanted. Do you have a, supreme threat? They have to appear as a supreme threat. And even though this was very shaky and cloudy, and it was tough to tell if we were supposed to recognize any of these people, it was powerful to me. Like, once again, at this point, still early in the episode, I thought, all hope is lost.
Yeah, for the last few years, I've had, I think it was called Ozymandias. It was the third to last episode of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Where that felt like a safe dropping on my head. It was so intense. And a lot, a lot of this episode felt like that. And you're expecting people to die. I was a little annoyed that more people didn't die. I gotta be honest.
Mm-hmm.
My Deadpool is
shot.
I'm O for a lot of people, but throughout everyone is completely at their just they're completely spent right away.
Well, I want to say, and I'm only bringing this up because you mentioned it, but who did I see in the audience with us at the Greek Theater but Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad, a.k.a.?
Nice. Jesse Pinkman, Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
He was there in the audience in the VIP HBO guest list.
The VIP section took out at least two-thirds of the theater. There were seats blocked off for that many seats. Good. Even Ozymandias couldn't get in.
That's fair.
Oh, man. So good. So Grey Worm, you say we lost track of him. He is saying, light the trench. And this was another great moment. Another great moment when, like, light the trench. Anybody light the trench? Give the signal to Danny to light the trench. Well, she can't see crap in the fog. Somebody light this trench. And once again, Melisandre came through. I was on Team Melisandre all night long. Hell yeah.
Yeah, they had a good plan. This just goes to show you that sometimes if you have a good plan, if the other side has enough people to sacrifice, they can overcome any plan.
Right, I know. So good. So finally, Melisandre, and boy, you know, it was like at the absolute last minute, she got this thing lit. And that,
no, it was the last
effective.
Second again.
I know. So good. But I loved it. And I was like, hell yeah, go get him, girl.
They light this thing up, and it is glorious. I mean, that was an impressive effect of it just going around the entire Winterfell.
Right, and it what also was impressive about it, once the trench was lit up, the fact that the army of the dead just kind of stand there and like, well, okay, I'm not stepping in that until they got their order later, and I loved it.
Right. I've got a question for a couple of book readers. Was there a reason why when Jaime was coming up, Jaime knows that only fire and dragonglass can kill these things? Maybe he could have, you know, brought up a bucket of wildfire. Do we know if wildfire?
Yes, wouldn't that have been great? That's what I thought. Yeah. I had the same thought. I'm like, yeah, okay, these torches aren't lighting it. Get some wildfire. That thing will go.
I'm not sure that there's any wildfire left. It was all kept at King's Landing, and Cersei may have used all of it.
For what?
Well,
I'm kidding.
If you wanted a party at the Sept.
Party at the Sept. Yes. Ceremony up front, party in the back.
So they get the trench lit up. There is there's like a moment of peace. Like, okay, guys, we've actually, all right, guys, good news. We've actually got them held off for a minute. And maybe like every viewer out there, I just keep thinking to myself, where is the Night King? Where is the Night King?
Yeah.
When is he going to show up? We need to see him. Because they hadn't even shown him in any promos for this season. This was his, you know, he only is in one episode. Tough for the actor, good for the living. You take it, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to ask, I've been keeping a list, I'm sure, like you guys, of all the people who we thought we might see again. Were you surprised that we didn't see a blue-eyed Hodor?
Yes, actually, that's a great point. I thought we'd see more, but in the end, this was too intense. I didn't miss him. And when people like Lyanna Mormont turned their eyes blue, that was as powerful as Hodor would have been, I think.
Yeah, that was the best. When the Night King's like, I got another trick up my sleeve.
I know. He had every trick up his sleeve. Good Night King. You really should have gone to King's Landing, like some people were saying you should have. You know, get some more bodies. Now, do you want to talk about the Night King's plan for the trench? Because that was also just brilliant. You know, just like at Hardhome, where he threw him over the cliff because he's like, okay, you go over the cliff. The ones that are still in some sort of manageable piece, will still be alive and can attack.
Sure. And also when they went on their road trip last season.
Right. Yeah. He's like, just send them. Go, go, go. It doesn't matter how many die. I'll get them back. Oh, so good.
One of the creepiest things about this, all of these battle scenes, was whenever the Night King basically hit pause, And,
yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden these guys who are, you know, these whites, and they're going crazy and they're shrieking. And when they just stand still and don't do anything, it's terrifying.
It's people who are currently standing still at this point in the episode. It's everybody down in the crypts. Gilly, oh my God, it's so tough.
Can we give a quick shout out to Varys for maybe the one line of comic relief where he's like, at least we're already in a crypt.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Did that get any? Did that get any laughs in the theater?
It did, but people were so tense that, you know, it gave a moment reprise before, you know, before it was like back on again, as it does here in the show. And to be honest, one of the reasons why I was tougher on this episode is maybe I heard so many people, like we've made podcasts about a year ago where we did a little skit where we talked about, you know, them going down to the crypts and then the dead waking up and getting them. And I have to be honest, this crypt stuff I think was the weakest stuff of the episode. Hmm. Maybe it's because we knew it was coming. If we didn't know it was coming, I think that would have been great. Right.
Well, the other thing that's kind of interesting about the crypt is that I kind of had thought at a certain point, and I know it seems crazy, that, you know, the people in Winterfell are kind of magical themselves, and I thought we would get some people fighting back from the crypt. In fact, honest to God, I thought when Arya was dealing with those whites, I thought those were actually Starks from the crypt coming to help aid their cause.
I thought they were librarians. I thought they were putting books back. Like,
look, the Night King is coming. We got to collect our late fees now. Otherwise, we'll never get them.
Look, someone's always got to stay in the library because you never know when Samuel's going to wake up and want to take a book.
24-hour guards from Samuel Tarly.
It's totally true. So we're hanging out in the crypt. Now, were you one person who may have that may have shown up and didn't, and it would have been tricky because many of his important bones were in different buckets.
Ned.
There was a lot of talk about Ned.
Yeah, there was
showing up.
Ned. Thank goodness he didn't. I'm glad.
Yeah, and I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but that was the first guy to come out of the crypt. Was that Maester Luwin?
It looked like him. Thank you. Great callback, Mork. That's who I thought. And Maester Luwin died at the end, episode 10 of season 2, when he was stabbed by Dagmar, one of Theon's men who took Winterfell.
Finchy.
Finchy, exactly. The actor who played Finchy on The Office.
Nearly done indeed.
But yeah, no, that's a great callback. Listeners, if you saw people that we should have noticed, let us, you know, tell us. Tell us who we missed in the Army of the Dead. Tell us who we missed in the fighting because it's so shaky and crazy.
Now, you know what's funny is that, you know, we saw some people last week and I was talking about how we'd have, you know, it was nice that we get to see kind of a resolution of Theon's storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a lot of people to take care of in this episode and this season, but it does feel like we brought Theon back for a very quick bit here. But I was actually quite a little emotional when Bran said, "You're here now where you're supposed to be." Although I did laugh because I believe that's exactly what he said to Jaime last week.
Right. He's got one line to
Bran's
make people feel good.
Here, you're supposed to be here. But then he does say, you know, back in your home.
So yeah, that's a good point. That's nice. A good point.
He's definitely become a double B.
Double B?
Buddha Bran.
Aw, we love Bran. And Bran is just like, you know, now that we've had this touching moment, I'm going to go now. And
yeah,
he
right.
gets into this flock of crows, and they're like going to go find where that evil Night King is. And this is finally we see him. And this is when you're like, okay, the S has hit the F.
The sheets
have hit the faceless men. I'm saying it's good. And oh, this shot. I love that shot of his eyes just glowing. It's like he's out of focus because we're focused on his hand and he's ordering. This is when he's like, you know what? I'm sick of waiting. Guys, build a bridge of dead bodies over this fire. So great. Oh, so good.
That's when I really thought, okay, they are S-C-R-E-U-D.
Okay.
Hang on, I'm gonna.
Is that French?
I gotta carry the one.
I mean, you're just like, there's still so many of them left, and that's the thing. It's like, I can't tell you how long. You know, sometimes it feels like there's sort of an ebb and flow in a battle.
Mm-hmm.
The one about this is, I'll say, is they felt screwed at just about every single point.
You mean the living?
Battle.
Yeah, the living.
The living. There was never a point where, like, oh, they're starting to carry the day, and then something bad happens. I mean, even though the whites were on the other side of this fire, it still didn't feel like.
How about this?
Got gained an advantage.
When did it feel like the Army of the Dead and the Night King were screwed? Ever? Never? It felt like good times for them always?
Not until the very last moment when Arya pulled out the, I'd call it a trick, but that's got to be, we're just going to call it Arya's move.
I know.
That's what she does.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Now, of course, if she didn't catch it in the other hand, I'd be like,
oh, man.
Turn over.
She'd be the real Butterfingers.
No, and we didn't see Littlefinger speak of the devil. A lot of people suspected Littlefinger would come back and that he would be, you know, he'd be risen from the dead somehow. But I kind of think they probably desecrated his corpse so much.
I would feel like the same thing of, like, if we saw Ned or Littlefinger, that would almost be like fan service instead of, reality, quote unquote, the reality that we have in this world.
Okay, so Jon Snow finally sees the Night King on a dragon, and he's trying to, you know, why didn't they have saddles? How he and Daenerys hold on to these dragons is incredible. But he sees the Night King on his dragon, and it's like, time to fly. Hell yeah. And this outside the walls, the dead have crossed the fires. Everybody's screaming, man the walls, man the walls. And this reminded
me. Why weren't they on the walls already?
You know, I'm tired. I just ran in the freezing cold about 300 yards back into the castle.
They're freezing.
Let me breathe.
Jon Snow is in the middle of a frozen cloud, and he's about 1,000 feet up.
Yeah, but
it's cold up there.
Hold on.
No goggles, no helmet.
Rhaegal has seat warmers. I'm saying
that's true. It probably is pretty toasty up there, actually.
Right, but this the Army of the Dead kind of creating a, you know, they don't have ladders to take a castle. They're creating bodies. This reminded me of the movie World War Z. Is that where it is?
Oh,
where
yeah.
They kind of act like ants to climb up walls. And once again, you're right, Cat. Fish, you never think the living, it's okay. It's like, well, it's just like 20 seconds till they get to the top of this wall. We're in deep dew.
I just thought to myself, when is the next time we're going to see Jaime or Brienne under a pile of 30 whites before they miraculously live?
And we held so long on Gendry. You know, Gendry's sitting there breathing, waiting for one to get to the top of the wall. And I thought, okay, this is his goodbye. But as far as I know, I have to be honest, it's so hard to keep track of everybody. Gendry definitely doesn't die here. Let's put it that way.
No death for Gendry. And, you know, it's funny. We're going to get to the point where, you know, on my list was Gendry and Brienne. And I'm about 90% sure Brienne is dead.
No, she lived. I'm pretty sure she lived.
Okay. See.
Yeah. And Pod lived. Last episode of the Joffrey podcast, I was just, you know, I was writing Pod's obituary. I started carving his tombstone, and he survived.
Well, speaking of carving, Pod's been having a lot of turkey lately.
So cold, Catfish.
Look, that's how, like, Pavarotti, Pod, you know, to get that rich, rich baritone, you gotta pack on a few LBs.
LBs? Lisa Bryson.
Shout out to Lisa.
Shout out to our friend Lisa. So we are up on the walls. I mean, it's just impossible. How is it? Look at the number of people who are fighting. And somebody always gets saved. Jaime was surrounded by, you know, it seemed like six whites cutting him down.
Now, drink.
Drink, right, exactly.
I don't know if I've been spending a little bit of time on the message boards. I don't know if you guys read this, but I guess production was slowed down a lot because people kept forgetting their lines.
What, it's just grunt?
It's yell, now it's grunt. Okay, start over.
How would you like to be in the ADR session for this episode? Like, we didn't get any of your grunts on tape while we were filming.
Yeah.
Come in and grunt for 5 days. Oh, so.
So they breach the walls, it looks. But this is where I had no idea where things were. There's the outer wall, there's the inner wall, there's the wall around the tree. I was very confused as to where everything was happening.
Right, and were the Unsullied completely mowed down? Because there's very few Unsullied in here.
That's correct. Well, they're
still a Casterly Rock.
No, I think their job was to be outside the walls. Now, some obviously got in, including Grey Worm, but, you know, I mean, this is just tough. So let's get to a moment that I didn't think had a great payoff, but I did love it. The Hound is, like the Battle of the Blackwater,
yeah.
He is out for the count. He's like, I'm over it. Beric Dondarrion is fighting his flaming sword off, and he's like, Hound, come on, Hound, come on. But the Hound is like, look, we're screwed. We're screwed.
Yeah.
And the Hound is going to be alerted in a minute of badass babe Arya Stark.
She goes to it. And this was actually great because I gotta be honest. A lot of the time when we were in the House of the Black and White and we're seeing her, you know, when she's blind and she's sweeping in the dark and all that and she's twirling around her little broom and it's like, this isn't going to help you out at all. And then boom. Oh, here yeah. she is on the wall, and she's crushing. She was great.
She was so good.
We didn't need to see all the scenes of her waxing those cars from the 50s to know that she is going to handle business.
She waxed on and off, and not just with Gendry.
And yeah, I'm saying, Arya, you should have gotten busy earlier. It gave you some ups, girl. Hell yeah, I loved it. And okay, we're gonna get to a moment, possibly the greatest death. Way to go out, Lyanna Mormont and the giant. First, she gets
swept away.
She gets totally smacked, just like you do with kids. You smack, you give them a smack to get them out of the way. Oh, so good.
Only if you remember the Kansas City Chiefs.
That's terrible.
Yeah, listeners, that's Catfish. He can be found at CJGMed67 if you want to attack him for making light of stuff. So let's get it. Do you guys want to do a real quick eulogy for little lady Lyanna Mormont, a character who in the books really we've only heard about in her letter to Stannis, which the show did, where she said the House Mormont will only know one king whose name is Stark. And so that's the only time she's appeared in the books.
Mm-hmm.
This actress, you can tell they love this character so much. They were like, give her more, give her more, give her more. This is intercut with another little girl kicking butt, Arya. We're finally, you know, Sandor Clegane, the Hound, he's like, oh, we can't win, we can't win. And I love this moment when Beric points at Arya and says, tell that to her.
Yeah.
So great. And it finally woke the Hound up, and he's like, I got to go save my girl. Right. I got to save my girl.
Yeah, one of the things that was kind of interesting was there were so many characters who are fighting, but they've been fighting for so long, they've been fighting each other for so long that, you know, Jon especially, Jaime to a certain extent, you know, definitely the Hound, and Arya's the one she's been waiting to fight like this. She's been waiting to go all out, and it was cool to get to see that. But Lyanna, otherwise known as Double L? Lollipop Lyanna.
She was about to. He was about to lick her head. Oh man!
Before she gets to get stuck in a giant's teeth. Bam! Right in the giant blue eyeball. How you're supposed to do it?
You'll take your eye out, kid.
That's exactly right. Here are your $2.
Okay, so the dragon battles,
yes,
I wish these hadn't been in so much clouds. And so when they finally fly above the clouds, I was happy because you could finally make some stuff out.
I mean, you could, but it was still just like, okay, who is scratching who? And what's, I mean, I,
oh, no,
it's,
you
it's
can,
not
wait,
horrible.
Who's scratching who? You know? Come on, you know one of them is my boy Night King and Undead Viserion. Oh, so good, and I'm so glad. And a great shot. He comes from down below, and Viserion shoots his blue flame up. Ooh, it is on, baby. Man, now what? Why did I only give this episode 8 out of 10? This is great.
Yeah, there were a lot of incredibly cinematic moments where you're just like, I've never seen something like that before. And they pulled off so many of these so well. From the beginning, where the Dothraki are, you know, with the meteors, whatever, the artillery going overhead, to some of these dragon fights. Even if I didn't know which dragon was which, it was still pretty cool to watch.
Right. I think in a real battle, I wonder if sometimes the dragons don't know which one's which, and they start frying each other.
Well, they certainly did a little bumping into each other, a little.
And Daenerys, it was last week, she said, you know, I'm here fighting your brother's war to Sansa. Give me a break. If this isn't everybody's war, she knew it. And I actually loved Daenerys in this episode. I don't know if many people are going to be tough on her because she could only do so much. But I loved Daenerys in this episode. The fact that she was fighting so much, I really liked it.
Well, let me ask you this. She was fighting a lot, or she was flying around a lot, but I would have thought that they would just be blowing flame all over the place until the dragons
right.
ran
yeah.
out of juice.
Yeah, exactly right. Unleash the flames, Drogon. Yeah. unleash the flames, Rhaegal. We got to let these people go. So now here we are. We're 47 minutes into the episode, and we get to the infamous library scene. And it slows down and becomes a scene like, let's be honest, The Walking Dead. Like, okay, I got to be quiet. I can't be caught by these people.
Yeah, except it was interesting.
You know, I read something by Miguel Sapochnik, and obviously he didn't write the episode, but he helped. And he was saying, you know, he watched the Lord of the Rings fights, and he's like, you know, we have to kind of, splice things up. We can't just have battle. People get weird. People get winded by it. And so this was a real nice, instead of like the battle and like people clashing, to have this kind of creepiness, which was good.
All right. This is slightly intercut with the scene in the crypts where people are banging in, let us in, let us in, let us in. And thank God they didn't let anybody in. I mean, that would have been the end of it.
Yeah. Rule number one, if someone wants to come in, don't let them.
Right. You look at your Nest Cam and are like, no, thank you.
No, thank you. So we get Beric, who is on his ninth.
He had
life.
He had a great death too. Let's be honest.
He
was great. And I tell you, everybody, you know, you were joking about a Grey Worm wanting his spear lit up. Everybody should have a flaming sword. It is dark, man.
Yeah, it was the only way that we could see.
The only thing I'll say, and I'm not sure, I don't know where I missed the point where the Hound was became totally cool with fire. When did that happen? Because he's like right next to Beric, not like a keep that thing away from me, you bastard.
Yeah, but he beat Beric already in a fight with that sword. I think, you know, I think he's comfortable with that. I think it's when he's surrounded by fire, then that's when he gets a little squeamish. But,
so Melisandre,
but he manned up here.
Yeah, Melisandre said Beric was brought back for a reason. Theoretically, the reason he was brought back was he just saved Arya Stark multiple times in this hallway fight that they have. And so, good on Beric. That's a good reason for the Lord of Light to keep bringing you back, Beric.
Fair enough.
You had one job, but you did it.
He did it well.
I mean, let's put it this way. If he couldn't do his job, Arya couldn't have done her job.
Right. Teamwork.
The more
you know.
It makes the dream work.
Now, one. I don't know if you guys were thinking about this at all, but you know, you have all these guys wearing armor. We have all this dragon glass. Were you surprised that no one tried to make a suit out of dragon glass?
Well, that's something that's very hinted upon in the books.
Oh.
That maybe Euron Greyjoy had one, and Jon has a dream in the fifth book, I believe it is, where he dreams he's on top of the wall and he's wearing what he calls is kind of like ice armor, but which some people think would be a dragonglass type of, or Valyrian armor somehow, Valyrian steel armor, and some people love that. So Arya and Beric, who's, you know, mortally wounded, and the Hound come into the Great Hall of Winterfell. And who's in there? The Red Woman, Melisandre, who when she said...
Making a sandwich.
Right.
Hey, guys, what's going on out there? Is anything happening?
When she said...
Do you know where the mustard is?
When she said the line that she told Arya in season 3, that you're going to put out these, you know, all these eyes, this color, and wait for it, a blue. It was like, Arya, go effing take care of business, girl. I loved it.
Right. Now, we sort of skipped by it, but did it look like in the library that the Whites were looking for a specific book?
Right. How to cook for humans. No, how to cook humans.
No, I mean, it kind of looked like they were trying to, you know, find a specific volume of something.
Well, they can go fast when they want to go fast. So the fact that you're right, that most of the undead in the library were kind of moving slow, it just gave the episode a different feel. And I believe that's what Sapochnik's talking about, is you need different moods. It can't just all be constant onslaught.
Also, keep in mind, this is pre-Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, those books would have been hard to find.
So Melisandre was on Arya's list for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Arya took her off the list, just like she took Beric and just like she took the Hound. And thank God she did. Once again, I was on Team Melisandre. Her death ended the episode. And once again, when she dropped this line about blue eyes, hello, love it.
Okay, but that's awesome. Okay, two questions here. Who are the people with brown and green eyes? And
maybe the waif. She killed him.
All right.
She killed a bunch of Frey soldiers. You know, I didn't pay enough attention to the eyes. I joked back when we did season 3 that I would, but I didn't. So,
okay.
It failed my homework, listeners. I'm sorry.
It failed again, Bubba. But how does she know? Arya's never seen the Night King. So how does she know he's got blue eyes?
Well, she knows that all these zombies have blue eyes. Arya was in the meeting where the plan was get the Night King to Bran so we can kill
him. All right.
And then when Melisandre, I got to give her up her other great line. What do we say to death? Calling back season one, Cereo Farrell loved it.
Not today, Jesus. I mean, not today.
No, that was great.
Way to do that, what, a week after Easter, Kev? Very timely.
Okay, so we go out and we're at the Weirwood tree. And you got Theon and a couple of sailors.
Right.
And their bows and arrows. And they look, it looks like there's about six guys.
I know. They have, if you look at the tub, they've got a lot of arrows. And I assume they're dragon.
But again, when you first see people come at them, you're like, okay, they're going to be hit with 20 guys at once. And then when we come back to them, they're still managing to, you know, when it looks like 10 guys are going to hit him at once and they're doing one arrow. And then we come back to them and they're like, okay, they're doing this Jackie Chan style. They're coming in enough intervals so we can kill them with arrows.
Night King, I thought his plan was great. He did great. He unleashes his undead Viserion to blast a friggin' hole in the Winterfell wall, which maybe is going to be really dangerous next episode if Bronn is coming up trying to collect a bounty if the wall can't even keep people out. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, you think I was a little surprised that at a certain point they didn't just cut to Bronn watching all of this. Just, you know, from a nearby tavern enjoying himself. Like, hey, are there any specials at the local brothel tonight just because the world is ending?
Right. Well, one thing I thought about is as we're seeing the dragon battle between the two, and the Night King is trying to get it out of his spear so he can kill the Jon Snow's dragon, Rhaegal. Oh, so good. I actually liked it a lot, but it's so fast and quick cut that it's hard to keep track of everything. But I did like it a lot. Catfish, sorry, my mind's going a million miles a minute. So you know who didn't show up was Lord Glover. You know Robert Glover? Is he going to show up next week? I'll stand behind Jon Snow. Now that the army of dead is gone, I'll be behind you forever.
Well, all I'm going to say is this. The Golden Company is, they got a lot of people in the Golden Company, and they might be happy to have a little bit of help from Robert Glover.
So he is the eighth most important person in Westeros.
You know who they're not. Well, they're not going to be able to get help from what I believe was the fifth most important person in Westeros.
Who?
Because we saw at one point, it was great. We didn't see him for a long time, and then we saw undead Kono.
Oh yeah, we did see undead Kono. Way to get that SAG credit, Kono. We love you.
Wait, who? You know who we didn't see is our boy from the Vale.
Right, right.
Where the hell
Jon
was he?
Royce. He was in the deepest part of of the crypts.
Where the hell was he?
Oh, we love you, Jon Royce. So Daenerys, Jon Snow, in the battle of his dragon against the Night King's dragon, he kind of had a wipeout and survived, of course. He's our hero. He's got to live. But then, oh boy, the Night King is staring up and... This moment is great when Daenerys unleashes dragonfire on him, but the one thing about it is you knew he wasn't going to die like that. You knew he wasn't going to die like this, the Night King. And so I actually kind of cheered when he finally, you know, this shot went on for a bit of
it
the dragonfire.
The fire didn't clear for a really long time. I was like, all right, come on. We know what's going to happen here. So, but why do you think the dragonfire didn't work on him?
Because he's a magic man, baby. He's good. He's gold. He's hashtag.
That'd be amazing. I want his business card to say Night King, magic man, baby.
Listen to me. You've been here at the Double P Podcast Network. You know hashtag ice cold. That was our coverage of the AMC's The Terror. Everybody, once again, we've been blathering on so much about our love for this episode. The only way this really makes any sense is if you reach out to us at DoublePHQ on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/DoublePHQ. YouTube, you just got to search Double P Podcast, Double P Media, or the Joffrey Podcast. We want to hear from you. We know you're still awake in Europe. You can't go to sleep after this. So, okay, the Night King didn't get roasted by Dragonfire. Jon Snow, book it. Double time. You got to kill him, man.
Now, this was one of my favorite parts of the episode.
Oh, you mean what's going to happen at the end of this?
I knew there was going to be fights. I knew there were going to be people going to die. I got to be honest with you. My biggest shock, and it's part of the reason why I knocked it down a half point for the overall arc, was because I didn't think the Night King would die tonight. However, this was a magical moment. So much is going on. We forgot that the Night King can just do a thing with his hands,
Right. Why did Jon Snow slow down? Keep running, dude. He hasn't raised him yet. Why not stab him while he's raising the dead?
Well, maybe Jon Snow didn't think about it as much as I didn't think about it. He didn't think, Now, the Night King, what's great is, you know, unlike some magic men who only have a local area effect,
yes,
the Night King has a much wider range than that. In Dungeons & Dragons, he would be a very high-level magician because he's able to get people to wake up inside the castle, far, like not even line of sight.
Oh, but yeah, no, this moment is a 10 out of 10. When the Night King rose, the Army of the Dead and Jon Snow is surrounded, this is another time when it should be like, okay, dude, just, you know what, stop slowing down, Jon, just attack. You've got a Valyrian steel sword. If you could just get close to him, but, oh man, so powerful, so good, so great.
No, this was fantastic, and there's a couple things I really liked about this, and there's a couple things I don't like, and we can get to those later because it doesn't really happen until later. But this is another moment where the Night King is basically just showing everybody. I mean, it's a mic drop in the middle of a song, but it's, you know, because Jon right now is surrounded, and you think of all the times he's been, you know, just up S Creek, and this is the worst. You know, this is the worst.
One thing I'll say, though, and it's another thing that happens that, you know, since this is all being wrapped up in one episode that we don't see, was there were a lot of people we were speculating would get killed, and then they'd have to deal with them, like, in later episodes, right? Like, I mean, okay, so we got Ed, we got Kono.
We got Little Lady Liana,
but, like, you know, we were thinking of other people. Like, wouldn't it be amazing if, like, there was an undead Samwell or Jamie, that we were really close to, and, you know, again, it's third episode, boom, we took care of the big bad for the entire series.
Or have we?
Right. Has Cersei supplanted him?
Obviously not. Obviously, their idea is that Cersei is the big bad. We can talk about that at the end of sort of our general ideas.
All right. So some boys who hung back are Craster's kids. Craster's kids are finally entering the fray.
Not Walder Frey or any of the Frey girls. I love it when the Council of Elders shows up.
Yeah, they're like, I want to be here to support the boss when he takes out the three-eyed raven, of course.
And this was great.
So finally, an hour and 4 minutes into the episode, who's coming out of the crypts but Maester Luwin? I think that is such a great call, Mork. That's who I thought when I saw him. But I wanted Sansa to get in here and have some girl power and start taking out these dead Starks. She'd be like, I hate you, Grandpa. I hate you. Hate you, great-great-great-grandpa. Take him out, Sansa. Take him out. You had something, Tyrion. Go fight, baby.
Now, would Grandpa and Uncle, who got roasted alive by Mad King, would they have been able to come back, or were they?
Oh man, that's a great question. But I don't think Uncle Brandon Stark.
It would have just been some
Rickard Stark. I don't think
stirring.
Right. They'd be just dirtying the floors.
Fair enough. So we're out. So inside. Stuff's going crazy outside. Jon is only fighting now 1,000 of these puppies at a time. But kaboom! Guess who and what shows up?
It's your girl. This is why it's important to have girlfriends. Daenerys comes and saves Johnny S.
Nothing is healthier.
Her nephew. She saved her nephew.
I've told you this more than once, Bubba. Nothing is healthier than a codependent relationship.
And here is where I had a disagreement. So I'm curious to see here. Some of it is. Okay, so my friend was right. He says Bran, and she does say go. So they're on board with him abandoning her.
Right, but she needed to take off sooner, because what ends up happening, as she's watching Jon go, the Army of the Dead start crawling up Drogon. And once again, you're right, the living never had a moment of peace. This is just like, oh, F, we are screwed.
Yeah, this was really terrifying. I wrote down on a piece of paper that is in another part of Catfish's beautiful house the two people who I thought would go down. And one of them I thought was going to go down right now in a terrible, terrible, terrible way. I was proven wrong.
Yeah, Drogon shook him off somehow. But, you know, how can you fight a dragon? I used to always say Cersei didn't really ever defeat a dragon, but she defeated Daenerys, a lot of her army. Finally, here's a dragon. Well, the Night King had one, but the Night King's army, when they're crawling up him as Drogon's taking off, Incredible. And who saves Daenerys at this moment but Sir Friendzone?
Sir Friendzone.
In the rescue of the day, of the night, the long night.
Oh, yeah. He finally...
He finally earns his keep
and gets what he deserves, which is no love from Daenerys.
Yeah, she didn't even give him a goodbye kiss, but, you know, maybe he kind of was too bloody, and, you know, she's like, I don't want any grayscale cooties.
So we're inside. I completely unrecognizable because I don't know Winterfell that well this year. Also, it's dark. Also, there's dead bodies covering
everything.
So, yeah, John is just sort of stumbling through.
There's, once again, Samwell in the midst of, like, eight people who should have died, drink, did not.
Well, how about this? He was fighting people laying down. I'm just going to lay here and then fight people. Good work, Samwell.
Ground and pound. A little UFC action. Nothing wrong with that.
And there is, and then we saw Brienne, and you know what? Again, it's so crazy. I thought we saw her again close up and her really getting it. But of course, since people can be surrounded by 30 whites and live, I guess it makes sense that Brienne is alive.
I didn't mind it, Catfish. If it had gone on maybe another couple minutes, I would have minded it. But you're right. Jaime and Brienne are slammed up against a wall, surrounded by whites, and it's tough. And it's – we're about to reach back out by the Weirwood Tree. We're about to reach the epic moment, which Theon – you know, Theon went out like a boss. We've hated him. When I started podcasting on Podcast Winterfell, my catchphrase was, I hate Theon. He got a great death. You know, just like a bunch of characters, he went out strong. Good work.
He did, and he got the good words from Bran. I kind of feel like Bran was telling him the unspoken words were, you're a good man, now go to your death for me.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Yeah. Okay, so we're back now. There's a moment where Sir Friendzone is protecting Dany, where it almost looks like Dany pushes him directly.
Yes. She kind of flips him around right into a sword. Thank you, Sir Friendzone.
Oh, so painful. We had this odd moment down in the crypt. Once again, I say the crypts weren't my favorite part of it, but it's a moment where I thought Sansa and Tyrion were kind of making a pact. Let's just kill ourselves and not go through, you know, not be part of this.
Yeah.
What did you guys – like this moment?
I thought that was tough. It was nice between them, but then it didn't really feel like – again, there was a lot going on, so maybe I don't remember it clearly. But it really felt like it didn't have like a strong ending, this moment, to me.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. There's this great moment between them. They look at each other. They hold hands, and then they sneak around the corner.
And then you think it's going to be like, okay, one, two, three, go.
Yeah, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid ending. Spoiler alert.
Exactly. And it's like one, two, three, peek around the corner. Yeah.
One, two, three, four. Five, six.
But you know what? You know, here, I gave it an 8 out of 10 at the beginning of the podcast, and all I've done is, oh, I love this moment. Jon Snow, he tries to have his hero moment, doesn't he? I mean, he tries to, but of course, who's going to ruin it for him? But undead Viserion, who is like, I'm going to light your ass. I don't care if you're a Targ.
I thought, you know, this was, I mean, I guess you have to show a lot of John trying to get back and struggle so that we wouldn't make fun of him for like being taken out so easily. But that was a little repetitive too. Like, I'm going to come out. No, I can't. I'm going to out. No, I can't. No. I'm going to get. No, I can't get him.
Yeah. I mean, just every moment, all hope is lost. All hope is lost. And so as we go on, the Night King finally shows up in the Weirwood Tree, and he takes his own sweet time. He's like, I'm going to relish this. He does have emotions.
He's like, this is the boss move. The only thing I really felt like I missed out of that was I thought Bran was going to say something really interesting to the Night King.
I'm waiting for an old friend. Oh, here he is. Night King, how you doing?
Right. Like, what was Bran's plan here? I was surprised that Bran came back because why would he want to be killed? Why not warg into something and hope that you can stay in that thing? You know, the whole idea of this is the more you warg into something, the more you kind of you can lose your personality as a human being. But since Bran's already said, not quite a man, not really a man, sort of an oddball, maybe he wouldn't lose his whatever personality he still has by staying in an animal.
Or by being dead. One thing before we get to the very end that occurred to me is Dany is a dragon. Dany cannot be burnt. So do you think maybe at a certain point Jorah should have just, you know, covered her in kerosene and lit her on fire and then just hid behind her? Because it's like, okay, you know, at the end of it, you know, she'll be a little chilly because her clothes will be burnt off. But still, she couldn't be burned. So I thought they might go there.
Well, I thought... So Theon has his moment. He charges forward. You're a good man, Charlie.
You're a good man. Go kill yourself.
Well, he had to delay the Night King long enough for Arya to sneak in.
Okay.
You know, the Night King's army kind of pauses because even out in the courtyard, you would assume, because they're like, hey, the boss is about to do something big. We're about to, you know, it's a company-wide meeting.
I'm surprised they didn't do a little applause or something afterwards. You know, like trying to suck up around the board meeting, around the table.
Right. And so it's I believe I knew it first from Independence Day. This, you kill the big boss, all the minor things will die. Everybody talks about the Phantom Menace.
It's vampires. That's the vampire thing.
Right. I never really liked this as a mode. But I will say that when Arya came up. And to be honest, I thought she should have been hiding under Bran's legs. You know, Bran has that big fur covering his legs. I thought she should have bust out of that or drop out of the tree. You know, like she was hiding in the tree and like, oh, no, you
Send
didn't.
Say hello to my little sister.
Right? It's not enough we got an aunt and niece. You want brother and sister to be.
Well, no. Not, what do you get your mind out of the frozen gutter there, Catfish. What are you talking about?
I didn't say it. You said it.
You said, no, I said nothing. Why not just hide as part of Bran and then go?
It's battle tactics, Catfish. It's battle tactics.
Catfish, with everything you say, you're making it worse for
you're
yourself.
You're just gutterhead, Catfish. Nobody went there.
Just
listeners, if your
pants.
Brian went... No, I didn't say that. Under the blankie. You friggin' just tool. Just tool, Catfish. This is going to be everybody's favorite moment of the podcast.
Definitely.
And so the Night King approaches... Did you know it had to be Arya because what Melisandre said? At this moment, I was looking for Arya, and they did a great job of faking me out. Like when she jumps at him, and I think, oh, she's going to stab him in the back, but then he turns around and catches her.
Yeah.
For me, half a moment, it's like, oh my God, we're about to see Arya get it.
Yeah.
And then she pulled her move. Love it.
Well, I was at this moment, so right, Night King is just staring, almost licking his chops at Bran.
Yeah, he's smirking. He's a smirking king.
Yeah, he gives him a smirk.
The only thing, again, that I'm missing from this scene is I want Bran to say something.
What? Give us an example, Ryder Catfish. What do you want him to say?
I thought Bran had some sort of extra plan, and he wasn't just like waiting for his death. So I thought he had something to say. But the fact is, he was not going to be an agent of his of rescuing himself. It was all down to Arya. So, you know, I thought Bran had a plan.
Do you think this was Bran's plan? Bran knew this would happen. So the Night King turns around and grabs Arya, and I thought, oh my God, this is it. She drops the knife from one hand, catches it with the other, right in the gut, or is it the heart? I don't know. He's
gut.
Now shaved ice. I love it.
I mean, Bubba, what you didn't describe about this scene is, and what was so amazing about seeing it in the theater is, the eruption of emotion and applause. Some people stood up after she did this. The theater burst into, I mean, it was amazing.
That's awesome.
All right, so let's do a real quick count of who is still alive. So Jon Snow is about to try to kill Viserion, or most
by yelling at him.
Right.
He didn't even have a sword. He was just going to yell at him.
Yeah, it worked for little Lyanna, but it wasn't going to work for Jon.
Tormund and Gendry have survived. Let's, as we're doing a pan of all the castle, as it's like a slow effect. You know, it's not like they all drop at once. It's the energy has to radiate out among the force to get them to all... You know, to all drop dead. So once again, we saw it in this big theater. It was so much going on. It was so emotional. It's kind of hard to remember who survived. Jorah at least is standing when everybody dies, even though he's going to drop to his death and not get a kiss goodbye from the Khaleesi?
Well, not yet.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that Sir Friendzone said the most obvious thing, which is why he was still a friend. He said, "I'm hurt." No duh, Jorah.
Do you think Grey Worm was there? So we have Podrick, Jaime, and Brienne also survived. Tyrion, Gilly, Sansa, Varys. They survived down at the crypts. Missandei survived.
Do you think that when Sir Friendzone was looking at all of the... oh, my God, that's insane. Down in the crypt, that is a crazy, crazy shot. When Sir
Jorah... Who's going to clean all that up?
Not me. But do you think Sir Jorah was looking at all those whites and he's like, "Oh, man, I could sell so many of these. They could make perfect slaves. I could sell these guys." Do you think that thought went through his mind at least just for a second?
I'm more concerned again with Bran, who says nothing here either.
To Arya.
To Arya. I would like him to have said something to somebody.
Like, "Thank you. You did it. You're a good person.
Or
Arya.
How about you're right here where you belong?
Home. Everything. If you hadn't done those things, you wouldn't be where you needed to be.
That's right.
So just like Melisandre came from the direction that the Night King and his army were and didn't get noticed, how in the heck did Arya get right behind the Night King? How did that happen?
Boy, that's a great, great question. Did you guys like this in Jorah's death that the dragon tries to kind of cuddle Daenerys as she's cuddling?
I think he was just getting close to take a bite out of Jorah.
Yeah. The Hound survived, so maybe Clegane Bowl can still happen. Melisandre?
Yeah, but it can't be undead Clegane Bowl.
Well, one of them's undead.
No, but we wanted both of them to be undead.
All right, fair enough.
And that's it. Melisandre has a great note. I kind of thought Davos would, he survived, he would come out and say,
right.
"Thank you, I'm sorry."
No, Davos is like, "Let me finish the job. It's almost time." Yeah. And she just walks out as soon as she took off, I thought to myself, like, what is going to happen here? And as soon as she took off her headband.
Her necklace.
I thought it was her. Yeah, all right. Your necklace. And she just...
She wanted to die. Hashtag old.
Well, and she did. And she did. So...
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust. Especially Melisandre.
Aw. So is Arya the prince that was promised?
The princess that was promised. Is Gendry king and then she becomes... Well, no, she'd be queen. Who knows? Arya's a princess in my eyes. You kill the Night King, you get promoted up to princess. Love it.
Hell yes, battlefield promotion. Who could have killed the Night King? Well, it wasn't Daenerys. It wasn't Jon Snow.
So when the Red Star bleeds, Azor Ahai, a.k.a. the Princess Promise, will be born again among salt and smoke. So how did Arya get born again under the Red Star?
Oh, that's... Well, where's the salt? There's plenty of smoke, but...
Yeah, there is plenty of...
But where's the salt? Is the salt, like, from maybe...
Well, she hopped the boat to Braavos in a town called Salt Pan, so...
That's a good call, but maybe it's salt in, you know, there's going to be some naval battles with Euron in the coming weeks.
That could be. So, listen, I wanted to talk about, and again, I might be the only person who feels this way. I was upset because, to me, the White Walkers...
Yes.
...have always been the big bad.
Correct.
And they start off the thing... The series with the White Walkers are coming. Winter is coming. It's going to be horrible. They're an existential threat to the human beings. Okay? Rulers come and go, but they're all alive. They're all human beings. And so the big threat is that everyone will be undead. So the reason I'm upset over the grand scheme of things by this episode, and I guess we saw it coming. I had assumed there'd be a big battle here and the stragglers would kind of, you know, somehow people would escape and reconnect, maybe with Robette Glover, who's now obviously very powerful. And so I always thought that the White Walkers were the big bad. And I guess, you know, I just have to reorient my mind around, you know, whatever. The people are always the worst enemy and not undead people.
I hear what you're saying, but I wonder personally if it was more like Lord of the Rings, which, once again, I haven't read Lord of the Rings, so I'm going on Wikipedia-esque knowledge, is they defeat, you know, they destroy the One Ring, everything seems happy, but then the hobbits return to the Shire, and, you know, it's been overrun with orcs and evil people, and so even after the big battle, they had to do this thing called the Scouring of the Shire, and so... To be honest, I wasn't sure they were going to do it, but it feels like this is George R. R. Martin's master plan that, okay, even if you defeat the ultimate evil, you know, man is still, you know, evilness is going to exist in all forms. So I didn't, you know, I had mentioned that on previous podcasts, and now it feels like that's the way it's going to go. Do I, as crazy as Cersei is she the ultimate big bad? In my opinion, no. But this is almost like for the rest of the three episodes might be like a denouement. And so if this wasn't a TV show and you just watched it in one long go, this might feel like the end. And then everything else, even though there, let's be honest, there's going to be a big battle in King's Landing.
Right.
It, you know, this still might be the true apex, just like destroying the ring was the apex in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and this, for me, was the only unsatisfying part. And a lot of it is just because, you know, Bran last week mentions that the only thing that the Night King wants is he wants an endless night. And at the moment, you know, the moment when Jon is staring at the Night King as the Night King is raising his hands, that look of fear and recognition of, oh, my God, I am so screwed right now. You know, the Night King, he just dies. There's no Hans Gruber moment when, you know, he falls out of Nakatomi right. Plaza. There's no, I mean, in terms of when you have a great villain, I mean, so he's super powerful, but he was never a great villain because he wasn't really a character. He was more of a force. He was an existential threat. He was like a hurricane. And so it was incredibly impressive, but just in terms of, on the one hand, the stakes are life and death for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, when he dies, it's not as satisfying because
correct.
You don't get that moment of, oh, I failed and, you know, oh, you kids, you foiled me again. Like Scooby-Doo. Like, we don't get that. So it's not as satisfying of a death. It's not as cool of a kill for Arya. I think we all agree that Cersei's going to go.
I would push back on that a little bit in that when, and I'm going by the movies, when the ring was destroyed and Sauron, the big eye on the top of the tower, when it collapses, that did feel like, okay, we did it. And Sauron's not any different than the Night King, in my opinion. I think the Night King's more fun than Sauron, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd agree. But it felt like Sauron, at least there was... I mean, I don't remember this at all. Sauron spoke, or there was the evil wizards talking to Sauron, or talking for him, or
okay.
you had more of a sense of that there's a personality there, there was a want there that just wasn't here.
So it seems to me like what you're saying is you do feel it's more satisfying because we're going to relish Cersei going down. That's more satisfying that she's after. That she is the big bad that will get defeated at the end. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
Well, that's what I mean by it's tricky because the stakes aren't going to be higher, you know, between all living beings and all, you know, staying alive or dying. You know, if Cersei wins, then Cersei and many, many, many millions of people stay alive.
Well,
right, and it's all going to be the same for Hot Pie either way. And so that's the most important thing.
Say you survive this battle. When would you ever want to fight again? Daenerys is suddenly like, let's go win the last war in the next on Game of Thrones. And if I'm a soldier or anybody in this, I'm like, no more fighting. I'm done.
No,
forget it.
No, all you got to do is basically just say, Arya, go to it.
And
that's all you got to do.
Yeah. Arya,
yeah. She's on the list.
To pack some faces and take care of business. Yeah, I'm down with that.
Yeah, and what does she need? And does she need any strategic advice? No. Bran.
Right, good point.
Bran's got all the answers. Bran knows everything.
He doesn't always say everything, though. It'd be, you know, you wanted Bran to talk more in this episode. If he knows everything, he's got to start giving some advice. Or does the Three-Eyed Raven really just want to defeat the Night King? He doesn't care who wins these wars of man.
Right. I'm not even sure he really wanted to defeat the Night King. He just didn't – that the Night King wanted to kill him.
Oh, I think he wanted to kill the Night King. I think that's, you know, he helped them an awful lot.
Well, the thing that will be interesting is whatever Wildlings are left, and I guess that's just pretty much Tormund.
Right.
Will they want to fight this battle? I mean, think about it. The big bad, if the big bad is dead, the Wildlings can go back, and then they got no worries now.
Yeah, I would.
There's plenty of real estate up there. There's not going to be a lot of fighting for resources.
Right.
it's a target-rich environment up there in the north now.
You know, if you like eating horses, there's a lot of frozen food right there at Winterfell.
Yeah, you got to preserve those things.
All right, guys, let's wrap this up. We've been talking, I don't even know how long, probably close to 2 hours now.
For as long as John was trying to make his way through the castle.
Final thoughts. Let's go around the horn. Mork, final thoughts on this truly incredible hour and a half of television.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So nitpicks and all, these guys have done such an amazing job for such a long time that I have hope that they are going to come up with at least one or two ways to blow our minds in the next 3 weeks. I'm looking forward to that. One little thing that I thought was cool was there's a couple of scenes where Jaime and Brienne are fighting next to each other, and I believe their swords were made from Ned's swords.
Yeah.
So, like, Ned Stark was kind of protecting Winterfell a little bit. I thought that was great. So, I really enjoyed it overall. Looking forward to the next three.
I thought it was a great episode, and maybe eventually after the first blush of it, it won't bother me so much that what I thought was the ultimate existential threat was handled in one episode, and now we're going to spend three episodes dealing with just regular nasty human threat.
Well, you always were so angry, Catfish, about, like, why are they talking about what happens afterwards? What happens afterwards? Well, now we're going to find out what happens afterwards.
I guess they were smart to do it because they could have just said, I would have said, who cares about what happens afterwards?
And you said, did say, who cares said, about? What well, do you mean? You, they could have, you said, did in multiple podcasts.
They would have said, well, that's happening in episode 4, so we might as well start thinking about it now.
I was tough on this episode because of the darkness and just various things that I like. I don't like so many quick cuts. I personally enjoyed the Battle of Hardhome better. I enjoyed the Loot Train battle a bit more. I might have even enjoyed a lot of other battles more. I think the season 4 big battle, the Watchers on the Wall, was certainly very fun. This wasn't fun. It was tense, but it was great tenseness. So, maybe I'll bump it up from an 8 to a 9. Just really, really good. Listeners, we've blathered on so long. Once again, we're only doing this to speak to you. Tweet at us, Instagram, at @PHQ. You'll see a bunch of our photos from the big event in Hollywood tonight. I'm going to play that audio from the event in a little bit later. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter, at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And my name is Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67. But Bubba, after such an important episode, we can't leave out the most important thing of the Joffrey podcast.
Mork's Twitter account. That's exactly right.
Right, Mork. First tell us your Twitter account, and then tell us who your Joffrey of the Week is. But first tell us why Joffrey of the Week is so important.
Oh, it's the thing that's our North Star. It keeps us going in the right direction.
Exactly right.
You can find me at Extraordinary. That's Extraordinary with the W in front of the final R.
Excellent. All right, so Catfish, let's get to it quickly. Who's your Joffrey of the Week?
All right, well, as I said, there are a lot of badass women in this episode. I could have picked from any number of them. It could have been little Lyanna Mormont, who was so powerful. It could have been Arya, who killed the Night King. But as I said earlier, it has to be Sansa, who learned from Joffrey himself that when you're leading the battle, it's best to do it from the safety of the basement.
And Sansa was talking about herself when, going to a big battle. She said, the worst ones always survive.
Yeah, there you go. That's terrible. My Joffrey of the Week.
We love Sansa.
Sansa Stark.
Do you have one, Mork?
I do. My Joffrey of the Week is going to return probably next week, definitely the week after, just like Joffrey himself, Jon Royce. He'll be back.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey,
come
guys.
On back, Jon.
Did I miss anything?
He missed a big episode. My Joffrey of the Week is Arya. When you kill the Night King, you get it. You get a promotion. Good job, Arya. We love you. Great work. Just like Joffrey took out usurpers, you took out the biggest usurper of all, the Night King. That's it for this week, and we will hear you next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.
Here's that audio from the event.
David Benioff and Dan Weiss. thank you guys for being here. Thank you for skipping the 6:30 showing of the Avengers and coming to do this instead. The title of this episode is The Long Night, and hundreds of people devoted hundreds of long nights to make this thing real. First of all, Bernie Caulfield told us... She told us not to thank her, but fuck that. Bernie, you are the glue that holds the Thrones family together. We love you. We could not have done any of this without you. We can't thank everyone from HBO or we'd be here all night, but we do want to say a special thank you to three women who stood beside us from the very beginning, making sure two novices didn't fuck everything up, Janet Graham-Borba, Holly Schiffer, and Mara McCallion. Thank you.
They're not here, but we'd be assholes if we didn't thank the crew who made this episode, the legendary Dragon Unit, who busted their asses for 3 months in the middle of winter in Northern Ireland, in the freezing rain, in the snow, in the mud. And after the Dragon Unit gathered all those thousands of hours of footage, one man was responsible for compiling it into a coherent whole. Tim Porter was the editor. Tim was our editor on the Battle of the Bastards, on Hard Home, Winds of Winter. He's been our go-to man for many years, but this is probably his greatest challenge. You can judge the results tonight. We'll just say thank you, Tim.
So tonight is partly about showcasing this episode, but it's also about saying goodbye to all our friends in Game of Thrones post-production. From the beginning, we've had a czar of post-production. The czar is generally not loved. The man who makes sure everything comes in on time and holds everyone to the highest standards is generally not loved. So it is to Greg Spence's immense credit. He has been doing this job for 10 years, is the best at it in the business, and everyone still loves him. Thank you so much, Greg.
So, 9 years ago, we asked our music supervisor, Evian Clean, Evian, quick, make a blink response. Who should do the music for our show? And he said, Ramin Djawadi. And we said, great, let's meet him. And we did, and he was the nicest man in the world. And he said, I'm sorry, but I have another job and won't be able to do your series. What followed was weeks of begging and groveling and more begging until we had thoroughly embarrassed ourselves. And Ramin was so humiliated for us that he finally said yes. Ramin, thank you for saying yes. Thank you for creating so much beautiful music. And legitimately, thank you for being the best person we know.
Ramin has been there from the beginning. Steve Kullback and Joe Bauer have only been in charge of visual effects for the past 9 and 8 years, respectively. But these newcomers are central to the show and the effect it has on people. Their commitment to excellence has been extreme, often to an alarming and unhealthy degree. Just take a look at them. Just find them, hunt them down, see those sallow eyes. This final season presented them with unprecedented challenges, and you are about to see what these guys and their team have made of those challenges. Kullbauer, we can't believe it's almost over. Thank you for being the fathers of dragons. Fix it in post is an old joke, but it's come true thousands of times on this show, and one man has made more fixes than anyone else. Joe Finley, D.I. Joe, our color timer. Thank you. It has been a true pleasure. And we've been working with the same sound team for so many years. It's like working with the 27 Yankees. Yeah, that's David's joke, not mine. I don't really care about the Yankees. Tim, Annalie, Matt, David, and Paula, thank you. Can we have another dance soon, please?
Finally, Miguel. From the moment we saw the director's cut of Hard Home, we knew we wanted Miguel to do this episode, which we knew would be the biggest and most difficult we'd ever made. We didn't realize how big or how difficult until we were in the middle of it. Halfway through his 55 straight night shoots, we had a Saturday meeting with Mig, and realized he was turning into Jack at the Overlook Hotel. The fact that he finished without axe murdering us is a minor miracle. The fact that he delivered what may be the best episode of the series to date is a major miracle. Mig, you are the caretaker. You have always been the caretaker. Thank you for being you, and for being a genius, and for being our friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Miguel Sapochnik.
Hi. Can I borrow that thing that you were reading from? Because I didn't know what to say. So, thank you to everybody that they thanked. Thank you a lot. Really, 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 from the bottom of my heart. I mean, Bernie and Chris as well. You know, what you've put up with for the last 2 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years. Long time. I was trying to think of what to talk about here, and I realised that first I needed to see the actual episode. So this afternoon I came down and I sat over there and I watched the beginning, and I thought, "Oh, this is pretty good." And then Dan arrived late, as usual, and he said, "Oh, let's look at the beginning again." So we watched the beginning again, and I thought, "Oh, this is good." And then we skip to the end, which kind of was a bit of a bummer. But the exciting thing is, I haven't seen the middle, so you guys can watch it with me all the way through. So without further ado, thank you everyone. I hope you enjoy it.